There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines, and top debate. This is The Grill on DubaiEye 103.8.
Welcome back to the show, second hour of that show, and plenty for us to get our head round over the next couple of hours. It is World Cup qualifiers in the European groups and other groups. It's final weekend of qualifiers, so no live Premier League action. There is some English Football League action, though, at the moment with Coventry in action as we speak. First half there, no goals in that one. Keep you updated on that. We've got live cricket scores to bring you, though. Mark Archer's looking at the final hour of play down at the cricket stadium.
Well, no, it's the first hour of play because it was a day-night match, Tom.
Day-night.
Only the sixth ever day-night cricket test match. And, of course, it's taking part here in our own backyard up at Dubai International Cricket Stadium. Day two underway. Sri Lanka won the toss yesterday, batting first at stumps. They were 254 for three. They've made really good progress today because they're on to 336 for four. Karuna Ratne, 165 not out. He's carried his bat through the innings, the opening batsman for Sri Lanka, which is seventh test century for the 29-year-old, and he is really piling in the run. So Sri Lanka, 336 for four. Now, that's not the only test match taking place because we do have action over in Bloemfontein where South Africa are taking on Bangladesh. And I can tell you, Tom, it is a run fest for the Proteas. They are currently 567 for four centuries to both opening batsmen for South Africa. Dean Algar with 113. Aidan Markram yesterday with 143. Today, centuries have been added by the Faf du Plessis and also by Hashim Amla. So I can sense a declaration just around the corner, but South Africa currently in a very strong position on day two in Bloemfontein. 567 for four. And of course, there is a T20 International taking place this evening in Ranchi in India. Of course, India hosting Australia.
That's what's happening a little later on down there in Ranchi. We'll have team news for you on that one in just a little while. In terms of sport down in Oz at the moment, it was a big weekend last weekend, wasn't it?
It was grand final weekend, yeah. Final on Saturday at the MCG. 100,000 mad Australians packed into the Coliseum there at the MCG to watch Richmond win their first premiership in about 37 years. And then on Sunday in Sydney at Allianz Stadium, we saw Melbourne Storm clinch another NRL title. So a big culmination of finals footy last weekend down under.
So now the preparation, the build-up for the Melbourne Cup starts in a couple of weeks' time, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course, you've got Melbourne Cup, the first Tuesday in November, and then you've got the Ashes starting, the first test match at the Gabba around about the third weekend of November. So I guess all eyes start turning. And then the other one is Australia trying to qualify for the FIFA Football World Cup. They played Syria in Malaysia on Thursday night. We were watching this with Chris McCarty. 1-1 was the final result there. Great fairy tale for Syria, who have to play all their matches away from home. That second leg of that match is in Sydney, I think, on Tuesday night. And then the winner of that tie goes to play, I think, one of the teams from CONCACAF, a fourth-place team, which is currently, Ross, Chris, is USA.
Not anymore. They won last night 4-0. They moved into second place in CONCACAF. And Australia now has a one-goal lead, taking the game back home because Syria dropped their home game. Even though they are playing outside of Syria, they are considered the home team in their last game. So Australia has a 1-0 lead going into Tuesday night's game against Syria. Syria playing with a lot of heart, tying it up there in the 85th minute. So big news for Syria. A lot of teams, a lot of people around here rooting for them to upset the Aussies down under. Can they keep it going next week in Australia is yet to be seen, Tom.
Talk football a little later on. We'll hear from Timmy Cahill a little later on in the show, in fact, with regards to Australia's qualification process. But whilst there might not be a huge amount going on down in Oz at the moment, a flavour of Australia comes to the UAE in the next couple of weeks. Ross Christian.
That's exactly right, Tom. You know, I was just sitting out for lunch yesterday with my good friend Jack, who I'm going to introduce here in a second. I just felt so much passion in his voice when he was talking about Aussie rules out here in the UAE. Good friend of mine joining us on the show, Jack Abbas from the Desert Dingoes. Jack, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Ross. Dubai Dingoes, by the way.
Dubai Dingoes. My deepest apologies to all you dingoes out there. Now, I was talking to Jack about this, and I just couldn't quite wrap my head around it. We do have Aussie rules out here in the UAE. It's a little bit of, a morphed version than what you have back home, but it is alive and well out here in the desert.
Absolutely. We started, well, before my time, the AFL-ME about 10 years ago, or 2005, just over 10 years ago. One of our founding members was just a bunch of expats kicking the ball around, and they decided to turn it into a league, and now successfully we have, there are five teams within the competition, three in Dubai, one in Abu Dhabi and Doha. And our team, coincidentally, was founded on Yellow and Black of Richmond, who won the flag last year and who went through 37 years of hardship and tough times and have ended up winning the flag convincingly, and hopefully we can do the same this season.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know a lot about Aussie Rules, Jack. As you know, I know pretty much nothing about it. But one thing I do know about Aussie Rules is I believe they play on one of the biggest pitches in all of sports across the world. So how do you transition having one of the biggest pitches in all of sports out in the world to playing out here in the desert?
Thankfully, we play 9-on-9 out here rather than 17 or 18 on a team. Normally, it's an oval of about 130 metres in length and 100 odd metres in width. Here we play on a normal rugby pitch. We reduce it to 9-on-9 and it's four quarters made of 15 minutes, which is a workout in itself. It's definitely a good run, and the team sizes allow for some competition amongst the teams and being able to attract some good talent, both locally and guys who've never played the game before.
I was going to ask you about the guys that are taking part. I'm sure there's lots of the Australian expat community who pine for a game of footy, so they all group together and get their mates. It's a good chance to be social. But are you attracting a few more nationalities to give the game a first go? It's quite similar to Gaelic football, so you can grab a few of the Irishmen or a few. I reckon Ross would be quite good at AFL. He's got a bit of height. He, you know, not a lot of skill involved, so Ross would be bumping a few guys off. It's quite just suit him down to the ground, wouldn't it?
Physically, just looking at Ross, you'd think he'd be a good AFL player, but not sure how we would go on the pitch. But to your point, look, I have friends all over the world, luckily in Singapore, Hong Kong, the US, and one of the things that brings everyone together when they move to a new country is a sporting team, whether it's Gaelic football, rugby, basketball, Aussie rules. Half our team are probably non-Australians. We have guys from Ireland, the UK, the US, Canada, South Africa, New Zealand. Some of us from Australia are from the northern states and have never really played Aussie rules. Guys from Gaelic football, soccer, rugby, hockey, a combination of sports. So, one, it's a good social aspect. Two, it gives guys an opportunity to develop new skills and try something quite different. And it's, a lot of the skills are very transferable from other sports. And we've been lucky. We started our training the last couple of weeks, and we have five or six new guys, a couple from Australia and a couple from other parts of the world who've never played, and they're picking it up quite easily.
I've watched games of AFL over the years, and I'm still confused about the rules and the laws of the game. I've got no idea what's going on. But essentially, you have a rugby ball or a footy ball, and you just try and kick it through. You get points between two posts if that's a goal, and then if you miss the big posts and you're off target, you go through the smaller posts, and that's a behind. And then you got a couple of cricket umpires,
butchers,
a couple of butchers saying, you know, how big's your piece of meat afterwards. how would you like to order that? And then there's lots of physical bumping, and you get a mark, and that's kind of it. That's the rules, isn't it?
In a nutshell, in layman's terms, look, it's a very physical game. Aussie rule footballers, in my opinion, are probably some of the fittest athletes in the world. They're running 15, 16 kilometres a match. They're sprinting multiple times within a game. Then they're jumping, they're charging, they're tackling, they're bustling tackles. So it's an exhausting sport. Substitutes are continuous, so there's always a flow in terms of bodies on the field who can move around. The scoring system's quite simple: 6 points for a goal and 1 point for a behind, which is either tapped in with your hand or any part of your body, or kicked to the post on the side. Same rules out here in terms of the scoring methodology.
Jack, you mentioned the league now has five teams out here in the Middle East. It seems to be growing year in, year out. Where do these teams play, and where could we go and actually see the Dubai Dingoes playing their home games?
Sure. So our first game is kickoff on the 19th of October, Thursday night at 7:30 in Sports City. Most of the games are generally played out at the Sevens Stadium, and this year they'll be spread between the Sevens and down in Abu Dhabi. There's the Abu Dhabi Falcons team, there's Dubai Dragons, Multiplex Bulls and Doha, and of course the Dubai Dingoes, or Entertainer Dubai Dingoes. And these teams can't exist without sponsors and people who can support them and help generate players to come along and be part of quite a good social team and a team that can do something a bit different than the usual weekend out here in Dubai.
The AFL has a great grassroots program. I think it's called AusKicks. Are you involved at all with encouraging the grassroots kids to get involved in you know the very basic development skills, etc.?
Funny you say that. We had a team preseason dinner a couple of weeks back at McGettigan's, one of our sponsors, and we spoke about getting more involved within the community, within schools and AFL kids. It's one of the things that they've done back home better than any other sport in code is the junior programs AFL. It's phenomenal. They've taken over areas back home which traditionally were rugby league or rugby union breeding grounds, and they're producing some great talent because they have a smart model, and we'd love to help and be part of that out here with the AusKicks and the schools out here.
We get some amazing sporting events in the UAE, in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, and I think it was maybe 7 or 8 years ago we had a pre-season NAB Cup match at Gantout. Is there any, I mean, how closely do you liaise with the HQ headquarters of the AFL, or is there any discussions about more matches or more player visits? Can you sort of to grow the sport at all like that in that way?
It's something definitely we need to put on the map again. Asia do it quite well in teams in Singapore and Hong Kong. There's
the movement to China, I think there was a match this year, wasn't there?
There was. We actually had one of our players from China. He played with us last year, and now he's in a team now in Singapore doing quite well. Ender, post picks. He was in Australia for an Asia Pac tournament as well. So it's a sport which definitely within the expat community has grown in leaps and bounds, and I think there's definitely more room for growth out here. Not just with the Australian expat community, but everyone else.
And with that room for growth, you talked about the crossover of talents as well, different nationalities, different sporting backgrounds as well. Do you have sort of team tryouts? Do you encourage people to come on down and try?
Definitely. So we started training the last couple of weeks and at Emirates International School, and very happy that they've been able to support us with that. So Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. and Friday mornings at 8 a.m. It's open. We welcome anyone who wants to come down. We've had a few players who've never played the game before, as I mentioned earlier, and they came down yesterday morning and the last couple of weeks, and they're loving it. So there's definitely room for people to come down and give it a kick and just make some new friends and see where it leads.
Tight vest, tight shorts?
It's no other way.
Jack, what's the season get kickoff one more time for all of our listeners? And if people want to get involved with the Dubai Dingoes or the league out here, website and Instagram and Facebook, something like that?
Yeah, hashtag Dubai Dingoes FC on Instagram. We have one of our social media managers who's always on that, very active with that. Naka plays an important part for our team in building the brand of Dubai Dingoes. He's been part of the team for the last 10 years. And there's a lot of work behind the scenes with any sport in team in Dubai or any expat city, so it's all volunteer work. No one gets paid to do this, so
trust me, Ross Chris gets paid.
Yeah, no comment.
Where did that come from?
So 19th of October, 7:30 p.m. Sports City. Come check out Dubai Dingoes versus the Bulls. Entertainer Dubai Dingoes. Thank you.
Big thanks to you for joining us. All the best to the Dingoes throughout the season. May it be a goodie. And do stay in touch. Come back and tell us how things are going.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Good to have the team up there, AFL, alive and well here in the UAE. If you want to find out more, then we'll, of course, post all the links up onto our website now. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more sport for you right here on Dubai I-103.8. It's The Grill live from Barasti.
This is The Grill, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now on Dubai I-103.8.
Yeah, let's talk Formula One now for the next few moments right here on The Grill, because plenty going on. It's happening down in Japan. I'll tell you who's on pole in just a few moments' time. It is Suzuka, though. It's the Japanese Grand Prix. What is it about Suzuka? We'll ask the drivers.
Suzuka is one of the best circuits in the world.
The track is just awesome.
It's just so flowing. I love it. It's my favorite on the calendar.
It's a very, very hard circuit. Massively challenging.
Fantastic. I love the place.
The first sector in Suzuka is one of the most challenging.
Very fast.
It's just amazing.
First corner, you enter there with maximum speed and you brake into the corner.
And then you come into the S's where you really need to be committed and you need to put every apex right because they are connected.
The sequence of corners going up the S's up the hill.
There's no resting.
Kind of snakes, left, right, left, right.
You can win or lose a lot of time there.
But then you finish sector one and there's that double right.
Yeah, Degner is also a corner combination where it really you need a lot of commitment.
You got a really fast right hand and then a tighter one.
I would say the first corner is the more difficult part because you can't see the apex.
But actually the most difficult corner is the spoon.
It's a tricky one because you enter really fast.
It keeps getting longer and longer and closing and closing.
You can have a lot of oversteer, you can have front locking.
It's one of the most technical corners on the calendar.
Yeah, 130R is always going to be like a historic corner.
130R is fairly comfortably flat.
But in the wet, it's really, really tricky and a difficult corner.
The chicane at the end of the lap, which is tight, big braking zone, chance to overtake.
See you later.
You've obviously got to bounce across the curves in the right way, get the traction on the exit. So it's a place where you can win or lose a lot of time.
But when you get it right, you know, it feels pretty good.
It's the wrist, the gravel, the old style, it's the 8 as well, and up and down.
To drive, it's just a pure pleasure.
One of the driver's favourite circuits, for sure, is a magic place.
That's what the drivers make of it. It is the Suzuka Grand Prix tomorrow, and I can tell you now, after qualifying for pole position a little earlier on, Lewis Hamilton has beat his title rival Sebastian Vettel in qualifying at the Japanese Grand Prix to take his 10th pole in 16 races this season. He's in pole position. That is something that he hasn't been able to do at Suzuka for several years, as he explained afterwards.
Lewis, a superlative pole lap. You smashed the lap record here. How satisfying was it to take P1 the way you did?
Yeah, man, super excited, man. It's been 10 years trying to get that pole position, so finally got it, you know. It's, geez, if you don't get it the first time, try harder. So 10 times it's taken me to try and get it, and I knew it would eventually come, so I'm really, really, really grateful.
Do you feel the team's right back in the groove? I know there was some anxiety after Malaysia, and what kind of race car do you feel you have for tomorrow?
I think our car is generally very strong in race trim, in qualifying trim, and then generally when we get to a race we are maybe a step back, you know, not as good. So trying to understand that philosophy and try and figure out how we can improve that for next year's car is key. But positioning, you know, it's hard to overtake, if not impossible to overtake here. So I think we definitely put ourselves in the best position. I think tomorrow I'm hoping that our car works well. It felt good on the soft tyre. Perhaps less so on the super soft.
Just finally, Valtteri obviously has produced a good return to form to take P2, but of course Sebastian will line up alongside you. How critical is the start? How aggressive do you expect Sebastian to be off the line?
I don't know. He won't be any more aggressive than I am. So hopefully, you know, I've got 8 meters. I need to make sure I try and keep the 8 meters that I have, and yeah, good start. I think starts have generally been strong this year, so just try and continue that.
Great job today.
Rather circumspect, Lewis Hamilton giving his thoughts there. He said after Malaysia, didn't he, that he was a bit concerned about the Ferrari pace as well. He keeps getting these poles, though, so he's giving himself those opportunities to take this tournament, to take this drivers away.
Yeah, and Ferrari were their own worst enemy in the last race, weren't they, when they both cars got taken out. And then, you know, we just as they're coming into a bit of form and Mercedes are questioning their pace, Ferrari's making mistakes on the racetrack during race day, and it has opened up a pretty comfortable lead now for Lewis Hamilton. I think there's 5 rounds to go of the obviously the calendar, and obviously all eyes towards Abu Dhabi for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix and towards the end of November. And yeah, just all the mistakes that Ferrari are making, it's at the time of the season where you just can't afford to make any more mistakes. And Hamilton's always been let out of jail there but he's quick. He's one of those premier drivers. You know he's going to be there or thereabouts. And he's eliminating the mistakes Ferrari making them, and it's putting really all the pressure on Ferrari to do more, maybe push a bit harder than Vettel would like to do, and rather than just use the natural speed of the Ferrari car.
He's very conscious, you heard there, Ross, wasn't it, that he's conscious of getting ahead early on from that pole, because Suzuka, not one of those courses really can do much passing on. And as we've seen year after year, the likelihood of rain down there, more than likely.
Yeah, we get a ton of rain out there in Japan. I'm surprised our weatherman Mark Marcher wasn't all over that earlier when previewing the race. But Lewis Hamilton, not a whole lot of overtaking going on there. So I do predict Mercedes to have a good day out there in Japan. It'd be nice to see if Vettel can do something from his Ferrari car. Daniel Ricciardo also doing well with Red Bull this year. But I do, just like you said, Tom, there's not going to be a whole lot of overtaking. It's kind of a smaller course out there in Japan, tight corners. So I predict Lewis Hamilton to be number one when it comes to El Champion.
What we have seen in the past is some classic battles out there on the course between some of the big names of the sport. Michael Schumacher famously had a number of tussles on the Suzuka course with a number of his contenders to the throne over the years. None more so than Ayrton Senna. That great spat between Senna and Eddie Irvine when it basically came to blows between the two. Senna, who is a man who didn't mince his words at the best of time, was very unhappy with Irvine's performance out during qualifying. He was very outspoken during the press conferences, and it all boiled over in Suzuka.
I had lots of scary moments in the race with backmarkers, just very unprofessional. I mean, if you're leading the race, the guy makes life so difficult for you to overtake, 2, 3, 5 laps, and then when you overtake and they get involved ahead of you, other guys make a mistake and you slow down, the guys come behind you, hitting you, going like banging wheels with you, and I'm leading the race and lapping the guy. So very unprofessional.
They haven't won one race, okay? They don't know what this is all about. And they think they are right to do what they do. Not only letting me lose 15 to 20 seconds, which is what I lost behind them, in the number of laps I was, and risking to be off. I was off the circuit. Plus, they come and overtake me again when I was hustling with Damon. Nothing justifies hitting him. Nothing justifies, and I'm not justifying myself. I'm telling you guys that what took place was absurd in many different ways, and nobody did anything, but nobody even talked about it during the race and after the race.
Those are the thoughts of a very angry Ayrton Senna after a Suzuka race back in the day. England heading down to Australia. Again, just remind us of that date for the Ashes.
They depart on the 28th of October. Yet to be, well, at this stage, Ben Stokes will not be part of that touring party, but depending on what happens as part of the investigation, he may go at some time. If it's been resolved, then he may be on the plane. But he's also been given a central contract, so England still see him as part of their plans, but it's all up in the air due to this police discussion. First test match is about a month afterwards. Yeah. I think it's around the third week of November. It all gets underway, of course, traditional first test match at the Gabba. Steve Finn's been added into the squad, obviously, pace bowlers is always a key element there, and England are probably looking to go along that way with Moeen Ali, of course, providing a bit of the backbone of that middle-order batting, and also with his handy off-spin. So it should be a good series, but it needs Ben Stokes. England need him really badly.
What about that England squad? It was announced earlier on in the week. A lot of critics coming out after this, saying it's one of the weakest English sides ever to tour Australia.
Well, they've got some very glaring weaknesses, and they've also got some very well-documented strengths. You look at the strengths, it's that middle order. It's Joe Root, it's Johnny Bairstow, it's Ben Stokes if he's there, it's Moeen Ali. Where they've got problems, we know how good Alistair Cook is and how good he's been in previous Ashes tours. They've got the experience of Broad and Jimmy Anderson with the new ball, albeit neither of those bowlers have had unbelievable success with the Kookaburra ball in Australian conditions. Yeah. They're very good in English conditions. But there are some weaknesses for England that they haven't seemed to fix over the last couple of years. The glaring weaknesses are another opening batsman who's consistent in partnership with Alistair Cook at the top of the order. They don't seem to have nailed down who they want to bat at number three. Does Joe Root move to number three? Should he stay four? There just doesn't seem to be a settled top order for England. And that is a problem because the Australians have, you know, some great fast bowlers, and they will be aggressive. They will want to put pressure on Joe Root. And the way of putting pressure on him is taking early wickets and getting him in early and really getting him to him with the new ball. Mitchell Starc, for one, will be someone that wanting to really target Joe Root, really target Alistair Cook, and they'll feel if they can get a couple of early wickets, they can really expose and put more pressure on the English middle order.
The Ashes just around the corner, preparation, a lot of chat before it. Let's get the thoughts now of Australian veteran cricket commentator Jim Maxwell. Maxwell's been giving his thoughts about the England squad, and he's not pulling any punches when it comes to suggesting that in his mind it's one of the weakest and they will come up against problems.
I grew up watching Colin Cowdrey, Ted Dexter, Jeff Boycott. They were very good players. Joe Root's a good player, but there aren't many others. Alistair Cook's probably past his best, although he made a brilliant circumnavigation of Australia with over 800 runs a few tours ago. Where's the rest of the batting? It's underwhelming. And this is the greatest list of perhapses I think that England have ever sent to Australia. And I fear for Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad. They could be bowling a lot of overs if they don't get away with the new ball into the Australian top order. And Ben Stokes, yes, fine all-rounder. He'll have to be throwing his bat at the ball and doing it brilliantly to keep this side together. The result of the series? Sorry, folks. Australia 5, England 0.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.